Dad, you know how you were saying I need to do more, be more, the whole fast fiber thing?
Yes.
Anyways, I saw that Vox is offering free standard installation and activation to the value of 3,000 rand.
That is a good deal.
With the money you save, I can buy some new skins for Fortnite. Talk about money in the bank.
With free activation to the value of 3,000 rand. Live smart. Hack life. Level up with Vox Fiber. Visit vox.co.za. T's and C's apply.
I'm Richard Villeberg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 256 for the week starting 7 April 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. You can WhatsApp the show on 071-999-1111.
On Talk Central this week, Bitcoin is back, baby.
Woohoo! Also on the show this week, Huawei launches the P30 and the P30 Pro in South Africa. Apple's iPad turns 9. It feels like longer than that. And the meaning behind the Matrix's green falling rain code.
It's Sunday afternoon. It's 1 p.m. We're live streaming at live.techcentral.co.za. And it's time to talk everything tech.
Welcome to the show. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
All good, thanks. We were just saying before we started recording that it's been a bit of a quiet news week on the tech front. Not a huge amount happening this week,
We all need a break sometimes, Duncan.
But there are a few things bubbling under which we can talk about, which we'll dive into shortly. But let's do our quiz.
The first question, which sovereign wealth fund manager has taken an 8% stake in Liquid Telecom Group?
And which country has accused Vodacom of depriving the state of 68 million rand?
Third question. Reports say WikiLeaks' Julian Assange will soon be expelled from an embassy in London. Which embassy is he holed up in?
And related to that, how long has Assange been in the embassy for?
I can't believe he's still there. It's crazy.
It's unbelievable.
And the last question. NASA slammed which country for blowing up a satellite in space this week, potentially endangering the International Space Station with orbiting debris?
Yeah, we'll get to the answers to those questions at the end of the show. But let's get into this week's news. And on a quiet news week, Bitcoin has grabbed headlines again for the first time in a while. By shooting up over $1,000 in the space of, I think it was about an hour, when was it? It was, I forget which day it was. I think it might have been Monday, or was it even last?
April Fool's.
Was it April Fool's Day that it went up?
I don't know. I'm asking. It sounds like it's something that happened, ironically, on April Fool's.
But it ramped up from around $4,000. It had been ticking up slightly from its lows around $3,400. It had been ticking up very slowly to above $4,000, and then all of a sudden, out of the blue, it just jumped above $5,000. So basically a $1,000 jump. And it's held on to those gains, and I had a look just now, and it's trading around $5,200. This is still a long way from where it was trading at the end of last year, obviously, or the end of 2017, rather, when it peaked close to $20,000. But for long-suffering Bitcoin investors, yours truly included, it's a bit exciting to watch Bitcoin suddenly get some life again, although no one seems to know why it's rallying so suddenly.
Yeah, the one thing I've been noticing with Bitcoin is the lack of excitement and activity that it had. Maybe I'm just not open to it, and maybe I'm not in the industry, so I wouldn't see these things necessarily. But it's still a very interesting and, I would say, a little worrying concept still. I mean, we don't quite know the full extent of, you know, the full capabilities of Bitcoin, right? Is it going to be the big thing that it's planning to be? Or, you know what I'm saying? So it's kind of, I was expecting it to be a bigger thing by now. I'm not talking about the value. I'm talking about the actual implementation of the technology
replacement for fiat currencies. It's not happening
yet.
Or
used in interesting scenarios, like small businesses using it for something, or I don't know, big corporate. I don't know. I saw a few shops enabling Bitcoin payment, which is pretty cool. But like I said, it's. I'm eagerly waiting to see what's going to happen. Like, what is the big uptake? What is the mass consumer uptake for Bitcoin going to be? Apple TV perhaps? I don't know, you know.
I suppose the question is, what problem does it solve? I mean, fiat currencies work reasonably well for us, especially for in-country transactions. I think cross-border transactions are a little bit more difficult, and maybe Bitcoin is going to solve that to some extent. But I don't see consumers in any sort of hurry to replace fiat with Bitcoin, except unless you live in a place like Zimbabwe or Venezuela.
Mm. Let's also be honest, the banking system, it's not really in their interest to have this thing lingering around in the actual currency system. You know, it's if you can't control it, there's the powers that be in the big banking circles. I mean, they obviously need to profit off their systems, right? Mm. Bitcoin doesn't allow for that.
Yeah, so the jury's out. Does it change fiat currency? Does it have to change the world of money? I mean, clearly it's a very exciting concept. And, you know, there's a lot of very smart people working behind the scenes and building it, and not just Bitcoin, all cryptocurrencies. But that must use, use case, that compelling use case that would get people to use it for everyday business. It doesn't seem to be there. See, people are still treating it more as an investment class. It's something you buy and speculate on rather than. Sorry, Rachat.
No, go for it.
I was just saying, rather than actually using it as day-to-day money, people are not really doing that to any large degree.
I agree. I think people also still don't understand it, right? Don't understand it. And that's part of the complexity.
It's not easy to get into, no. If you want to buy Bitcoin, it's a lot easier than it used to be, and these exchanges have made it quite easy to buy and sell Bitcoin, but at the end of the day, you're not buying this to replace your rands. You're buying this as a speculative instrument, thinking you might make a good return on it.
Yeah, exactly. And I was just typing something as you were saying that. I recall seeing some, I think Samsung has it, and then I think Huawei might also be looking into that. But crypto wallets for your phone, that's kind of embedded on your phone with that little chip that they've got, enabling you to use Bitcoin with more things, I think, within your operating system or within your transactions. There's potentially something there, I think, because our phones are there all the time. Maybe you could use some of the processing power. I don't know.
I don't think you certainly don't want to mine Bitcoin on your phone.
Yeah, but if we've got a lot of processing power, right? If you plug your phone in overnight and you just let it do its thing.
Yeah.
It's not going to make you money, let's be honest, but it's a nice novel thing. I mean, you know, if we see more cryptocurrencies that really become something, especially in the early days, it might be useful.
No, I don't know.
But we don't see it enough. Yeah, we don't see it anywhere.
The potential is there for this to be a world-changing technology. The question is, what is the what's the phrase? What is the killer app for this money for cryptos? And I'm not seeing it yet, anyway. But as again, there's some very smart people working on this, and maybe that killer app is waiting in the wings, and it is still going to change the world. But for now, people are treating it as an investment class, which is exactly what I'm doing. I'm just having a bet on it, put some money in so that I'm excited and keep myself interested in what's going on. But I must just say, being invested in Bitcoin over the last 6 months has been very, very tedious and boring. I mean, nothing's been going on, especially over the last, prior to the move a week ago, was trading in a very narrow range around $3,700, $3,800, and really not going anywhere. I'd actually stopped looking, checking the price. Now suddenly it jumps $1,000 and everyone's interested again. So
makes you wonder, was it done on purpose? Was it to just reinvigorate some interest around Bitcoin? I don't know.
I mean, there's a speculation that someone bought $100 million worth of Bitcoin, and that's what's caused the price to surge. Mm. So, and there's definitely interest in it still, and I think a lot of people are obviously still sitting on Bitcoin and watching it very closely. And it's good. I think it's good that there's some volatility coming back in, because if it was just going to stay at $3,800 and not move, then I think people just kind of lose interest in it.
Yeah, exactly. We need some exciting things to happen, but you can see all those transactions. You can see all those transactions, right? So you'd be able to see if somebody did massive chunks.
Yeah. Yeah,
right.
I think so. Although, I don't think that those sort of purchases would be done all in one tranche. They'd be done across multiple exchanges and multiple Bitcoin wallets and stuff. So, but people have looked at it, and there's speculation that there was a, I think it was a $100 million purchase of Bitcoin that caused the price spike. But the, what's interesting is that it not only maintained its level of recovery at around 5,000, but it's continued to grow. And I'm not sure I give any credibility to any credence to the people who look at the charting around Bitcoin. So, you know, is it trading above or below its 200-day average, looking at things like Bollinger Bands and all these things that technical traders do. I don't know if there's anything to that. But certainly reading some of the technical analysis, the suggestion is that Bitcoin is back on a bullish footing and is likely to continue to rise. But who knows? I mean, sometimes I think that that sort of technical analysis is no different to reading tarot cards.
Yeah, it's speculation, right?
Yeah, just wait for someone to come into the market and sell $100 million worth of Bitcoin, and it's all the way down again. and you've got these whales, so-called whales, in the Bitcoin community. Guys are sitting on massive amounts of Bitcoin, and they can move the value of the market.
Yeah, interesting. I wish I was one of those.
Yeah, me too.
I read another story of two or three weeks ago about somebody who forgot their Bitcoin password, the key, so they couldn't get access to their thousands of dollars worth of Bitcoin.
Yes.
That's funny.
There was an episode of Silicon Valley, I forget which season it was in, where the guy had a huge amount of Bitcoin on a USB key. Which got tossed in the rubbish bin. So spent the episode trawling through a rubbish dump trying to find his USB key.
I'm sure that's happened somewhere in the world.
I think it's actually based on a true story, that episode. Yeah.
That's so funny.
And then, of course, there's the famous story of the guy who bought two pizzas with Bitcoin back before Bitcoin was really valuable. And the value of those two pizzas today runs into, I forget the figure, but something like tens of millions of dollars.
So when are you going to sell? Are you going to stick around for a bit?
I'm not selling. I'm hodling. I'm going to hodl for the foreseeable future. Even if it goes up to $20,000, I'm still going to hold it. Because you never know. I mean, it could eventually. I saw Simon Dingle, who's a former colleague of ours, tweet a while ago that one Satoshi, which I think is a millionth of a Bitcoin, it will be worth one US dollar sometime in the future. Sometime in the very far distant future. But so guys are bullish out there still about the prospects for this thing.
Yeah, I'm out of that race. I'm so far behind the Bitcoin race.
Did you ever buy any?
No, I didn't. Yeah. I played with the mining back in the day, but nothing substantial.
Yeah. Did you keep the proceeds of your mining?
No, I'm one of those stories where I just erased the app or my machine. I wiped it one day. I didn't really worry about too much about whatever I mined at that point. So, I thought it was a thing.
What price were you mining at, though, as a matter of interest?
I can't remember. It was very early days. I mean,
that stuff you mined actually might be worth something today.
It was definitely close to a Bitcoin. I remember coming close to it.
Yeah.
Thinking, oh, that's pretty cool. But,
one Bitcoin is worth quite a lot of money.
Yeah. It's one of those things, right? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people have that story.
Yes.
You know, you play with some software. Oh, this is a little cool little thing. Let's see what this can do. Run it for a month and then,
Yeah. And the circle halving is happening next year, and to talk that could also light a fire under Bitcoin's price. But it's exciting again. I like to see the volatility in the Bitcoin market, because when it was almost flatlining over the last few months, and to see it bouncing again adds some excitement to just being an investor in it and watching it. And I'm definitely going to hold it for a long time. So, Bitcoin is back, baby.
Yeah.
So Huawei, you went along to the launch this week. I was meant to be there, but had an emergency to deal with, so I couldn't get there. But they've launched the P30 Pro, and Huawei is certainly on an upward trajectory ever since, I think, the launch of the P20 Pro a year ago, and then, of course, the launch of the Mate 20 Pro towards the end of last year. You've had a look at this device now, Rehat. What are your thoughts?
Look, there's no doubt that this is a very slick and very nice device, but I'm still a very happy Mate 20 Pro user, I must be honest with you. But some of the interesting things about this device, I mean, in terms of look and feel, holding it in your hand, it's kind of very much that kind of that Mate 20 Pro kind of look and feel, you know, apart from the subtle differences in the camera, which I'll get to in a moment. What I find particularly interesting was that there's no speaker grill in the phone. So if you look at photographs of the phone, there's no speaker grill on the front. There's just a little buttonhole for the camera. And that's kind of it. And how they do it, how they get sound to your ear is there's actually a speaker built in behind the screen, which does some vibrating stuff, and then you hear the call. I didn't get a chance to listen to it, so I'm quite keen. That's probably the one thing I'm looking forward to the most, to trying out the actual call quality of that specific technology. It is pretty interesting.
One downside of the Mate 20 Pro is the speaker is built into the USB port at the bottom of the phone. Yeah. So if you plug it into charge and you're listening to music not on headphones, in other words, you plug it into power, then the music becomes muffled, which is
I often hold my phone and then you kind of cover it by accident too, and it muffles the sound. It's one of the downsides of that phone. But to be honest with you, with the amount of Bluetooth speakers that I have, well, I've got a Bluetooth speaker and headphones, and I've got a little adapter for my car now. It's kind of alright, you know. I'm not too worried about that.
Yeah,
as long as the camera is good. Now, speaking of that camera, the one thing obviously where Huawei is pushing this is kind of at the photography. They're saying that this is the best camera obviously in the market, and they're really pushing the kind of unusual photography, or it's just unusual in terms of the quality of what you can do with this camera. So it's got a 40 megapixel main camera, the P30 and the P30 Pro. There's also a P30 Lite, which is got a lower spec camera. It doesn't have this fancy camera.
Yeah.
One of the interesting things, though, it's got a zoom lens, an optical zoom lens built into this body. Now, if you think about what an optical zoom lens is, it's shifting glass, right, to get that lens or to get that image zoomed in. So what they've done is they've built a very interesting technology, and you can actually see it in the back of the phone. It's a very cool-looking little mechanism. But it's built in horizontally into the body with a little prism that essentially shoots outwards. So that little stacking lenses moves behind your screen to get the desired optical zoom. It's got a 5x optical zoom, and you can push it to 50 times, I think, in total.
Yes, that's right.
Which is absolutely insane. They did a demo on it. You obviously have to put it on a tripod at that distance, but it's not really practical for most use, to be honest. 5x optical could be quite useful, but I never use zoom on my smartphone, to be honest. It just doesn't really, you know, just it's the image quality isn't that great when you zoom in, regardless.
Optical, of course, there's no loss in quality, so you can get
But if you're looking at using a zoom, you'd normally zoom into something that you want to shoot, but your hand shaky. There's still a bit of shake, right? So it'll be interesting to see how they handle it. I didn't actually play with it, you know, took my own photograph to see what it's like. I'm sure it's going to be fine, but if you push it to 50 times, it's really a little bit impractical.
Yeah, but you don't really want to do 50 times digital zoom, because you're going to get an awful loss of quality, of course. Yeah. And I'd imagine that the optical image stabilization within the phone does a pretty good job of the 5x optical zoom.
Look, I mean, I can imagine this thing will be perfect for parents who want to, you know, the kind of scenario where parents in the back of the hall want to shoot the kids on stage, you know, that type of thing. If you in a game vehicle and you just want to zoom a little bit, for sure, I think this is really going to address that need. And I mean, based on the Mate 20 Pro's image quality, you know, if you just kind of take that with an optical zoom, it could be pretty good. I agree.
The other
interesting thing about this camera is the ISO sensitivity. So they're touting this as a very good low light shooter. They pushed the ISO sensitivity. I mean, you know a bit about ISO sensitivity, right? Your film 100, 200, 400. It's just kind of a rating for those that don't know as to the sensitivity of light. Now, in general, your high-end digital SLR will probably push maybe 12 or 20,000 ISO, But this phone pushes that to 409,000.
That's very impressive, yeah.
Obviously, incredibly grainy, I think, at that resolution, at that ISO rating, because the higher you push, obviously, the more grain you get.
Yeah.
But for most phones, for most images you use on social media, right, it should be more than sufficient. If you can shoot in low light conditions, potentially without using a flash, because I hate flash photography for one, but just getting that extra brightness out of the images, I think this could be a pretty big thing for, you know, cell phone photographers. And we kind of all are a cell phone, we're all cell phone photographers.
And of course, you can remove that graininess quite easily in Lightroom for your phone. I mean, Lightroom is very good at doing that specifically, and it runs on Android. So fire up Lightroom and remove that graininess, and you could actually end up with a really good picture that's taken in very low light conditions.
Yeah, and again, because you're using it mostly on social media, you know, that grain doesn't look as apparent. So if you just throw a filter or two on there, like you said, it won't look as bad. So that is going to be quite an exciting thing to keep an eye on. But yeah, a 400,000 ISO rating is pretty insane, no matter how you look at it.
Yeah, my DSLR goes up to, I think it's 2.5 million on the ISO range. Not that I've ever shot at that, but it does go that high.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, yeah, we're going to get to a point where you're just going to have a sensor that just absorbs every bit of light at full resolution. I mean, imagine that day. It's going to be, interesting day for cell phone photography.
Yeah.
So the phone's going to be available for around 19 grand, so it's not a cheapie.
So it competes head-on with the Galaxy S10.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. This is the high end. I'm still looking forward to seeing at the end of the year if they bring out the upgrade to the Mate 20.
Oh, they will.
Although I won't be upgrading this year. I have to wait for my cycle next year.
Yes.
But again, I'm sure my phone's going to be, you know, still fulfilling the need very well like it does now next year, so I'm not too worried about it. It's a very well-built camera. And they also got a very good front-facing camera on this thing. So for those that like to shoot selfies, you'll be able to do so at a very nice, very high resolution, which is great.
Yeah.
20 megapixels, sorry.
20. Yeah, no, it sounds like a great phone on paper. And I'm sure it's a good phone in the metal, as it were, as well. I am really looking forward to seeing that Mate 30 Pro later this year. I also won't be upgrading, but I guess both of us will see what's in the market next year. But I'm sure the Mate 40 Pro will be out towards the second half of next year.
But just think of it like this. We'll be in line for an upgrade with a Mate 50 Pro, Duncan. That's where it's at. The other thing they spoke about at the launch, which is also coming to South Africa, which I'm a little bit more excited about, to be honest with you, is the laptop, the P30
The Mate X.
Sorry, the Mate X, yeah, that's it.
That's a beautiful machine.
I'm really – if you look at the quality of the hardware over the last kind of year or two, I think this could be a really good MacBook contender if you're looking for that kind of design, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And they've got this new feature that they demoed. the demo didn't work first time, but to their credit, I think the feature was turned off. But you can just tap, if you've got a Huawei phone, you'll now be able to just tap on the notebook and then it transfers content. It's called OneOp. So if you want to transfer any data on your phone or from your notebook to your phone, you'll just be able to do it with NFC and tap your notebook on a specific spot, and you can transfer data between the two, which is pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. So you can presume in the app you'll be able to set up what exactly you want transferred, like a specific folder, for example.
Yeah, you just have the app open. So if they were showing a presentation. So if you have a PowerPoint on your screen, on your notebook, you just want to do some work on it, you want to transfer to your phone, have it open, touch your notebook with your phone, and it transfers it directly to your smartphone, and vice versa. Yeah, it's pretty exciting, but you know, less exciting for me as a user. But still, it'll be interesting to see what that 5x optical zoom can do, I think.
Yeah, and you're right about that Mate X. If I was in the market today for a new laptop, I'd be giving serious consideration to that machine. And it's apparently got very good battery life as well.
Yeah, I'm sure if they implement some of their artificial intelligence with the batteries on the notebook as they do with their smartphones, could be a very interesting thing to see in terms of productivity. Obviously, it's not a gaming machine. This is a pure, it'll be a business machine.
Sure. Sure.
But, Huawei, again, pretty impressive with what they can do.
China is coming.
They're here already, man.
They're already here. Just having a bit of trouble getting into the US, but that's another story.
But the US has got Apple, so they're fine.
Yeah. Speaking of which, the iPad, Apple iPad, is 9 years old this week. Went on sale for the first time this week 9 years ago. It feels like longer, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I relate it to the iPhone launch and how that kind of impacted it, that also feels like ages ago.
That was 2007.
Much younger, yeah.
Yeah, and the iPad is 2010, so it's been in the market for a long time, I guess. That original iPad, I didn't own one. Did you own the original?
I got
the iPad 2, the second generation one, and then followed that up with an iPad Air 2, and recently got the iPad Pro, the 2018 edition. As far as I'm concerned, it's the only tablet worth considering.
Oh, yeah. Look, that's the other thing that, sorry, just to jump back, Huawei also announced their new tablets. So that'll also be something interesting to see in the flesh. Mm. But I agree with you. Nothing has really competed with it at all. I mean, I still have an old generation iPad and it fulfills its function so many years later still perfectly well. I mean, as a media, I always use my iPads as media consumption rather than productivity.
Yeah.
But for that point, it's brilliant. There's nothing like it. Battery life is insane.
Yeah.
Quality of the video is insane. And it's just nice to hold. You know, they really got it right. There's no finicky things that you have to worry about, buttons and things. It's just a slick unit.
Yeah. And there have been so many challenges over the years to the iPad, and none of them has really been terribly successful. I suppose the closest has been the Samsung Android tablets, but they really don't appeal to me that much. I don't really like Android that much in that form factor. And of course, some challenges have disappeared altogether. If we remember the BlackBerry Playbook, which was a complete disaster.
I remember the HTC Flyer quite fondly. That was also
I never used that one.
With a pen. They were one of the first guys to do the pen that you can write on. Yeah.
Yeah. The iPad, they just got it right. And the new iPad Air looks very nice. It's sort of mid-range between their basic one and the iPad Pro, and it seems to be the device that will appeal to most people. Yeah. I really love my iPad Pro, and I'm increasingly using it to do work, not just media consumption. So, particularly using Microsoft Word, which is very good on the iPad. My laptop, with the load shedding we had recently, my laptop wasn't always fully charged, so I just popped my iPad into a Logitech keyboard and carried on working, and it was fine.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I think with the Pro, we're really seeing what the kind of the true future of that device is, with the power in it. That beautiful screen and that pen. I mean, now it's becoming a real productivity machine. I think before, when I first got it, I was trying to use it as a machine that I could go to events with or do whatever and kind of record stories and things. And it didn't really work like that for me. It kind of just, again, ended up being a media device.
Yes. Which is what it has historically been, you know.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that they haven't. Have they changed the layout of the icons? It always used to be the weirdest, you know, you have all those icons, but they're so far apart. They're spaced, you know, so weirdly. That's always the one thing that irked me about the interface. You know, you have to scroll so much to get to your fourth screen.
Yeah.
If you've got a few icons on there.
Well, I group all my icons together. But OCD like that. So I've got productivity, streaming, social media, security, messaging, magazines, that sort of thing. So everything's grouped and neat, and I don't have more than one homepage on my iPad. But apparently with iOS 13, which is going to be announced at the Worldwide Developers Conference in June, one of the big changes for this year's iOS update is going to be a major overhaul of the iPad home screen.
Yeah, it's about time. They really, because there's a lot of real estate there that you're not using optimally.
Yes, I agree. It works better on an iPhone, but it doesn't translate that well onto the iPad. You're right. There's big spaces between the icons, which is not really used. And I'd really love the ability to see more Android-style widgets on the iPad's home screen.
And there
are ways of doing it. I mean, they really kind of do it. If you scroll to the left on your iPad and you get I'm not sure what they call that page, but you do the search and it shows you Siri app suggestions, screen time and, stocks and tips and all that sort of thing. They could integrate some of those elements, I think, onto the home screen, in a better way. So it's going to be very interesting to see what the iOS beta looks like when it comes out in June.
Yeah, look, they can certainly do. I think they have neglected that part of the operating system for a bit. The apps and things were fine, but there was just there was a bit of disconnect.
Yeah.
And I'm not a heavy iPad user, but as a casual iPad user, that's just what I've noticed.
Yes. And they need to make better use of that USB port. For example, with iOS 12, you can't plug in an external storage device. It's not going to detect it. And that's just silly because that's just a software thing. And I really hope they rectify that with iOS 13.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're trying to push people to the cloud systems. But if you're a Mac user and you're in that environment, it'll make so much sense for you to be able to plug in an external drive to both your machines, right?
Yes.
To either your machine to transfer data to your iPad or vice versa. I mean, we are dealing with big data most of the time when we, you know, if we want to do some big videos or something to show off, that's the way we do it. That's the way we would want to do it.
Exactly. And transfer stuff off quickly. And I get the cloud argument, and maybe the cloud does make it irrelevant at some point, but it'll still be a nice feature to have.
Yeah. Look, Apple is America's or US centric, right? So they don't really have too much issue with cloud or data, at least there, I think. At least not the market that they are targeting.
Yes. So iPad turns 9 and still dominates, and I think will continue to dominate the tablet space for some time to come. But I do look forward to seeing those new Huawei tablets that you mentioned that were announced. I didn't realize they'd actually done that. But I think they may still be held back by Android not being the greatest OS on tablets.
Yeah, exactly. And Android also needs to do a bit of work there too. I think in terms of it's not bad on an Android platform, on a tablet, but I think it could be a little bit better. But you know, at least they're innovating the whole time. We're seeing some good changes from Android.
Yeah,
which is fantastic.
To be fair, I'd actually rather, you know, for a tablet, I think I'd put iOS at number one. I'd put Android third, and if I couldn't get an iOS based tablet, I'd get a Windows 10 based tablet.
Oh yeah, we keep forgetting about those bad boys, eh? Windows 10 machines.
Yeah.
It's not about the applications you run on those. It's really, you know, if all of your applications work well in that environment, it doesn't necessarily have to be, if it's a full machine that you're holding in your hands, then.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which is where they've done well with these, what do they call them? All-in-ones where you, not an all-in-one, I forget the terminology. It's these ones where you fold the screen around and it becomes a tablet.
Yeah.
Which are not great, because then you've got the keyboard in the back and it feels a bit weird.
And it's still heavier than a tablet would be, right?
Yes. Yes. Next year, 10 years of, 10 years of iPad. Can you believe it?
That's crazy. We're living in the future, Duncan.
We are. Speaking of the future and going back to the past at the same time, our last story this week, bit of fun, something you picked up, Rehat, about the movie The Matrix, I haven't rewatched since it first came out. But I think many people remember, even people who haven't seen The Matrix, will remember the lines of green code falling down the screen. There's a fun story behind this.
Yes. So, I mean, that's probably the most iconic part of the movie. And if you read the story published on The Wired, they had some extracts of an interview with the guy that actually designed it, the designer behind kind of the visual side of that. And he explains the story of how those glyphs are actually sushi recipes out of an old sushi book. That he's got, apparently he doesn't give the name, but apparently it's a very traditional, Japanese sushi book that most Japanese families have in their home. So you can imagine it's something that's just been, you know, kind of probably part of the staple, sushi recipe for generations. But yeah, they modified it a bit to just look better on screen, obviously to read top down. But yeah, that is, it's incredibly fascinating. But can you believe that it's 20 years since, 20 years end of May that The Matrix came out?
Unbelievable.
How wild is that?
2 decades, well.
1999. I remember the day I first watched this movie vividly.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a day that changed, I think, many geeks' lives.
1999, that's amazing. 1999 doesn't feel like that long ago.
Yeah, it feels like 10 years ago, right?
Yeah. But, I mean, 99, what was happening in 99? Y2K bug was about to destroy the world. Netscape Navigator was probably the primary web browser.
We were still using, I was still using dial-up. Fiber wasn't really a thing until 2000s, right? 2001, I think. 2000.
I think now, yeah, 99. I think I was also on dial-up.
ADSL.
I was also on dial-up. Yeah, I was indeed. Yeah, ADSL only came in 2003, I think.
There was a period in 99 that I was on a wireless network in Cape Town. There was
Centec.
It wasn't Centec. It was kind of an unofficial. These guys were operating in a gray area. Okay. I mean, they were running a legitimate ISP. I don't know how they did it. They still are. The company, I still actually see the guys around from time to time. But yeah, they had a 2 meg line and they were selling off 128K connections for 600 rand a month or something.
Right.
And that was 24/7 internet without dialing up. Wow.
Wow. Back in those days, that was incredible.
In 99. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you still remember Telkom 7 rand weekend special?
Oof. Yes. Man, nobody could get hold of you on your phone on the weekends, right? It was just dialing in.
Permanently connected.
And how often did your line drop? Because I remember a few drops over the period. So you had to pay 14 rand.
Yes. I do remember it dropping a few times. A friend of mine had an ISDN connection to get maximum speed out of the 7. I think he was getting like an extra 10 kilobits a second. And he would connect on a, I think it started on a Friday evening, if I remember correctly. So he'd connect 5 minutes after it, you know, due to start, and he'd connect all the way through to Monday morning or whenever it was. And he'd download as much stuff as he possibly could on that line, maxed out the whole weekend.
There wasn't much else to do, right, with the internet. I mean, there was a few sites you could browse, but downloading was...
BitTorrent.
Was it? Yeah, BitTorrent.
Was it BitTorrent? Well, even back then.
That was...
Napster.
Napster.
Oh, the bad old days.
Yeah, man, alive. But we digress. I just want to quickly come back to The Matrix. I mean,
sure.
Considering it's 20 years, did you know that Will Smith turned down the role for The Matrix?
I didn't.
He was originally going to be Neo, and Val Kilmer was going to be Morpheus.
Okay.
There's actually a very cool video clip Will Smith's YouTube channel where he actually talks about it. He essentially turned down The Matrix for Wild Wild West because he wanted to get out of. He didn't want to become the alien guy. He didn't want to become the alien actor.
Right.
Or that kind of sci-fi movie. I think the alien connotation. He didn't want to do that. But he also explains how he was pitched. He was pitched essentially The Matrix based on that opening scene where the Wachowski brothers came in and said, I don't do this justice. You must actually hear him do it. But he talks about how that the person jumps and then the camera pans around and then it's time stops. And it's very funny how he explains it. But yeah, he turned down that role. But I think the way it turned out was perfect. I mean, I wouldn't imagine Morpheus as any other character.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yeah, I must watch it again.
Good time.
I must watch it again. I must watch it again. That other Will Smith movie he did with the zombies, what was that called? Do you remember that one?
Oh, yes.
That was such a good movie.
That's iRobot.
Well, it wasn't iRobot. It was the one where he, didn't he have a dog as a companion?
Wasn't he a survivor, last survivor on Earth or something?
And the zombies came out at night and, that was such a good movie. I can't remember what it was called.
I am Legend.
That's right.
That's it.
That was excellent. Has Will Smith done any movies lately? I haven't seen his name much lately.
Yeah, he's done, I'm sure he's done a few, but I remember watching, he did that Netflix one, that Netflix movie recently, last year, I think.
I don't think I watched that.
I can't remember what it was called. Bad Boys is coming up, the new Bad Boys movie.
Oh, they're making a new one. I love that movie.
Yeah. He was in Suicide Squad. That's another one I remember. That was a great movie. I really enjoyed it. It was a bit of a mishmash, and I know a lot of people don't like it, but I thought it was great.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't watch.
Let's not forget Hancock, that really weird superhero movie playing.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. I must say, I don't watch movies that much anymore with streaming. I tend to watch a lot of Netflix shows and stuff, and even some Showmax these days, but. I don't go to the movies anymore. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, neither do I. I do want to go watch this new Avengers or what's this called? Oh, you know, that's how I'm into pop culture. I can't remember the name of these movies, but the new Avengers, the Endgame, I think it's called.
These Marvel movies.
The Marvel movies, yeah.
Not my scene.
The last one in the series, so it's kind of going to wrap it up, I believe.
Okay.
It's going to be interesting. But yeah, everything is, for me, it's YouTube. There's so much good content on there. You know, a lot of relevant, not necessarily fictional entertainment, but there's a lot of really good content on there that I like to consume.
Yeah.
And then for everything else, there's Netflix series.
Yeah. You know what my new favorite thing is on YouTube is watching pilot videos, pilots playing X-Plane 11, the flight simulator, and doing and doing real flights. And it's absolutely fascinating. I must have watched 4 or 5 of these now, and I can't get enough of them. And there's some local ones as well, you know, Durban, Joburg, Cape Town flights. But the American guys are very good because they explain exactly what they're doing as they fly the 737 or whatever plane it is.
And they
chat to and they do them live on YouTube. But the ones that are recorded already are also worth watching. And they take questions from people who are watching the video live. And he goes through the checklist. You know, pulling away from the doors at the airport, going through the taxi, talking to air traffic control, taking off, talking you through the flight, showing you everything that he's doing in terms of the, you know, all the buttons and that he's got to press and all the ATC clearances he's got to do and looks out the window when it's a bit boring. And, I saw one of them, one guy's even wants to, set it up so that, you can go into the back of the aircraft, which you can do in X-Plane 11 and go to, you know, the TVs in the back of the seats and on a long haul flight, go back there and show people on YouTube, have people watching him on YouTube, watching a movie, as a passenger. It's all kind of fun. You know, the landing and takeoff and the discussions he has with air traffic control and with people watching him on YouTube. This is one guy I was happened to be looking at. I can't remember his name, but he regularly does this on YouTube. It's what he does for fun. And every weekend he takes out a flight and he gets, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of people watching him live. It sounds boring, but it's actually quite interesting. Especially if you fly a lot and you don't actually know what those pilots are doing and what's involved in landing a plane and all the checklists and all the different things they have to do during a flight. It's actually very interesting. And X-Plane 11 is such a good flight simulator. It's actually mind blowing. Mind-blowingly realistic.
Duncan, I can't believe I'm saying this, but you actually enjoy watching game streams.
I do, certainly when it comes to flight simulators, yeah.
But I mean, you can understand the fascination with people watching other people playing games. Yes. I'd never understood it until I started watching some of the games that I enjoy playing. I mean, it's no point in watching something you're never going to play yourself, really, unless you're going to watch it, just kind of want to see the gameplay.
Yeah.
But the real fun is seeing other people. It's kind of part strategy, and with Flight Sim, it's kind of part understanding. So if you want to go play it, you would play with some reference of what a real pilot would do. You wouldn't – I mean, there's no manual for a lot of these things, right? No games come out with manuals. So it's fascinating from that point of view to see other people doing – even on YouTube, watching other people doing a craft, making music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing something, creating this
it's
behind the scenes.
I mean, I haven't played PUBG in a while, but when I was playing PUBG, invariably I got killed quite early on. I'd actually carry on watching the other players because those who haven't played PUBG, you actually get to you get a view of another player and it passes you off to the, and you can watch the final player finishing it off. And it's actually absolutely fascinating to see how good the guys are by the time they win their chicken dinner.
Oh, yeah. But I mean, I guess there's two sides of it, right? There's the gamer that wants to pick up tips. So as you watch the guys finishing the game, you can kind of, sometimes it's bad players, sometimes it's really good players, and you pick up good strategy.
Yeah. Yeah.
From the other side, it's just, it's entertainment. But yeah, wrapping up into this thing that we had this podcast on, the FPB ruling or potential, you know, that could impact all of these type of things, you know, broadcasting gaming content or broadcasting content that you don't own. I hope it doesn't happen because it's such a good form of entertainment. And I definitely don't think it's a case of people or these companies losing sales. In fact, I'm more likely to buy a game. In fact, I bought games based on watching streams, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, it does. Yeah, that FPV bowl discussion was very interesting. Rachel and I chatted to Dominic Cole from the Internet Service Providers Association. And if you're looking for that podcast, it's talking about the FPB Films and Publications Amendment Bill, which is currently sitting on the president's desk. Very problematic piece of legislation. Go and have a look at the podcast section on Tech Central and have a listen to that, or subscribe to the Tech Central podcast in your favorite podcatcher, and you'll find it there. Right, that takes care of this week's news and other stuff we spoke about. what's your pick this week, Richard?
So, yeah, let me just get over here. Sorry, Duncan, I actually didn't keep it close by, but you know that I bought a a load shedding proof battery bank last week. I wanted something that gave me a little bit more oomph, so to speak. So I bought myself a Romos 30,000 milliamp hour battery bank. I mean, this thing is the size of a really big vape. That thing, if you know what I'm talking about.
That thing will give you enough juice to charge a laptop.
Yeah, look, there's plenty of power. Actually, when I tweeted this, somebody on Twitter actually responded with a video. They actually powering their fiber router with this thing.
Okay.
You just need to do a little hack with a cable or two. But yeah, this thing certainly got enough juice. 5 volt at 2 amps, 9 volt at 2 amps. So it's got a nice range for powering kind of bigger devices. And, you know, I can charge my phone a couple of times. But again, I got it, you know, just, I've got a 15,000 milliamp battery bank, but for some reason it doesn't work as well with newer phones. I don't know why. It just doesn't seem to charge them so nicely. So this is my solution. But now that load shedding has stopped for a bit, I don't, you know, it's kind of just sitting here gathering dust for a bit.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it'll come in handy as soon as blackouts hit after the election time, right?
Yeah. 9th of May, blackouts, load shedding is back.
Oh, yeah.
My pick this week is an app that's been around obviously for a long time, but it's gotten a lot better lately, and I'm finding it myself using it more and more and more, and that's DStv Now, the streaming app from MultiChoice. Offers you all the live TV channels that they offer through their various bouquets. You'll get the channels that you subscribe to based on your package. But all the catch-up content is there as well. Much more catch-up content than you, than you'd get on your PVR, although obviously you get the streaming content on your PVR as well now. But I use it mainly for live TV. When I'm sitting at my desk, often need to watch ENCA or SABC News or Bloomberg or one of those channels. I find it very convenient. I just pop it up in a window, pop it up on a second monitor, and I can keep an eye on, I don't know, state capture commission hearings or whatever it is that's going on that particular day. And the app, I'd say a year ago, a year and a half ago, had some real issues, like stuttering when streaming, quite a lot of buffering and stuff, and they've seemed to have sorted all of that out now, and it's pretty rock solid. So I thought I'd give them a shout out, and that's the DStv Now app. Pretty good. And I think that's our show. Rechot, will you put your song pick on the show notes so I can grab it up in Spotify? Our winner this week is Bitcoin, for obvious reasons.
Oh, yeah.
And long may it continue. And Rechot, unless you have someone you want to pick on, we don't have a loser this week.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to pick on people mood today.
Well, that's our show, I guess. Do you have a song pick this week, or shall I?
I just pasted the notes in there. It's a little classic from the 90s. I think it might actually be 98, 99, if I'm not mistaken. But Placebo with a song called Every You, Every Me.
Oh, I know that song. Every You, Every Me. There it is. All right, before we play out with that, though, let's do our quiz results. The first question this week was, which sovereign wealth fund has taken an 8% stake in Liquid Telecom Group? And that is Britain's CDC Group, formerly known as the Commonwealth Development Corporation.
The second question, which country has accused Vodacom of depriving the state of 68 million rand? And the answer is Tanzania.
And reports say WikiLeaks says Julian Assange could soon be expelled from an embassy in London. Which embassy is he holed up in? And it's obviously Ecuador.
And then following up on the fourth question, how long has he been in the embassy for? And the answer is an incredible 7 years, since 2012. It's almost as long as what the iPad's been out. He's been held up in one building. Can you believe it?
Can you imagine being – yeah, indeed. Can you imagine being holed up in a space like that for so long? I mean, imagine – being stuck in a hotel for 7 years, for example. It'll be like a prison.
Oh, it is. Oh, very much a prison. And yeah. I'm sure life hasn't become easier for him. I mean, look at where he is now, right?
Yeah.
Almost on expulsion.
And the moment, the moment, of course, he steps out of there, he's going to be arrested and could be spending time in a real jail cell.
Yeah.
I don't have a strong view one way or the other about whether he should face justice. I mean, I've obviously read the stories over the years, and I haven't actually formed a strong opinion on the guy. I think he's very worried about being extradited to the US.
But look, for better or worse, he's certainly changed a lot of things. You know, there's certainly been pre-Assange and post-Assange the world. You know, WikiLeaks has changed a lot of things.
Yeah. And the last question in this week's quiz: NASA slammed which country for blowing up a satellite in space this week, potentially endangering the International Space Station with orbiting debris? And it was India. And that's our show. We're playing out with Every You, Every Me from Placebo. This is from the late 90s, I think. This is very 90s.
Yeah. I've been on a 90s like music binge again. There was some really good indie rock music.
Yeah.
So it's nice to actually relive a lot of those memories.
Yeah.
And great.
Great stuff. Until next Sunday, from Richard and myself, take care and cheers.
Ciao, ciao.